This is a Voyascape podcast. You can find all of our travel podcasts from around the world at voyascape.com.
Welcome, everybody, to another weekly edition of our Quick Hits. That is our more up-to-date news in the world of travel and points and miles. My name is DeAndre Koch. Thank you for being with me this week. Hope everyone has had a great week. So for this Quick Hits, we're actually going to start off a little bit talking about a slight change with the podcast itself. Nothing that's really going to impact you all as listeners that much, but wanted to make you aware that we are joining a podcast network called Voyascape. It is specifically for travel podcasts. I'm very excited about this for multiple reasons. There's only about currently 10 or 11 podcasts in this network. They are all travel based. We are going to be only the second Points and Miles podcast that is part of this network. The other one, which I feel like we're in fantastic company with, is the Frequent Miler podcast, which is huge and at an aspirational size that we would love to grow to at some point. And all of this is honestly thanks to you all. The growth that we've had has been fantastic. The support we've received has been fantastic. And the goal is always to be able to provide a lot of value to you all as listeners. And of course, to be able to continue to support the growth of the podcast and the work that myself and the team puts in every single week for both the Quick Hits and the regular episodes. It was always an opportunity to be able to monetize in some way, shape, or form. So you guys have probably heard that we had a few episodes last month were sponsored by Sailie, which we'll be talking about in more detail when our Roatan episode comes out in a few weeks. But the goal has always been to be able to have some aspect of monetization with the podcast, and being a part of a podcast network is helpful. What does this change for you guys? Well, quite frankly, you're going to hear a few more ads possibly in some episodes. That's going to start off with, you're going to hear basically the start of the episode is going to say, you know, this is a Voyascape podcast, and maybe a little ding or something like that, or a little tune with that. And then there's going to be small ads that are going to be inserted within the podcast. Now, here's the thing, because this is a travel only podcast network, these are going to be only travel related ads, and some of them are just going to be read off by me specifically. So it's going to kind of just flow right into the podcast itself. And so it should not be too disruptive. I want to make sure that nothing that we do is going to be disruptive to you all as listeners. And it's going to be no different than how in the middle of our episodes, we've got about a 60-second cut where I talk about our Facebook group and other things. So very similar experience there. Or you may hear about another podcast as maybe at the end of the show. So what I mean by that is perhaps you'll hear Greg from the Frequent Miler or David from Travel in 10 comment about their show specifically and why they would be a good listen as well. The other podcasts in the network, some of them are about food, specifically traveling and experiencing food in different countries. Other are based on kind of backpacking or what to do in different layovers or hiking through Guatemala. So very travel specific. I feel privileged that we're going to be in the points and mile space and travel stories like we in content that we typically do and in good company with the Frequent Miler. So you'll start seeing this happening very soon. Again, shouldn't be too disruptive, but wanted to let you guys know that we're growing and appreciate the support that we've had from you and would love to continue having more support. And I think the great thing about this is it also exposes our podcast to others who are in the travel space. They love hearing travel content and maybe they've never heard about points and miles before. And so by getting plugs from other shows to come listen to our show, we'll have more people that are in the know about points and miles, which is fantastic for everyone. And we get to help other people revolutionize the way that they travel. And one additional thing I want to note as well is that the ads that you will hear should all be travel focused. So it may be from a country specifically or some sort of, I don't know, backpack or some sort of travel related product. There should not be anything that is outside of the travel space because it is really for sponsors that are looking to tailor information or tailor whatever they want to, you know, promote or discuss to people like yourself who love to travel. Now, by far the biggest news and shakeup and update in the world of points and miles, which was just a rumored discussion on last week's Quick Hits, is confirmed this week with the release of the refreshed Chase Sapphire Reserve, but also the Sapphire Reserve business as well. And so I'm happy that a lot of the rumors that we talked about on last week's Quick Hits, which if you haven't heard that, absolutely go take a listen to that, because we actually talked through basically everything. I don't believe there's anything that we talked through there that was rumored that did not happen. Thankfully, the one thing that we were not sure of was, are we still going to maintain the $300 per year travel credit? And it is good news that we are keeping that. We're still getting the global entry credit as well, which is $120 per every 4 years. The best in class travel protections, travel insurance, rental car coverage, all of those things are still in place, which we're thankful about also. But unfortunately, the fee has gone up to $795. Now, interestingly, the new business Sapphire Reserve also has a $795 fee. So what I'm actually going to do, instead of just saying, hey, here's all the updates with the new Chase Sapphire Reserve, because we pretty much covered all of them last week, I'm going to talk through the business Sapphire Reserve and talk through the similarities it has with the Chase Sapphire Reserve with the refresh. So we're going to talk through this first, and then I'm going to mention some of the dates and timelines that you're going to want to be aware of to determine whether you want to downgrade or upgrade or whatever it may be if you're considering having one of these cards in your back pocket. Now, I will say straight up, I really don't see the business Sapphire Reserve being that appealing to business owners like maybe a business Platinum would, unless Chase is going to start putting out some serious and ridiculous sign-up bonuses for this card, 200, 250,000 Chase points. I mean, that would make it worthwhile. I think the benefits on its own, not as attractive as an Amex Business Platinum, but also not as attractive as the same fee card, which would be the Sapphire Reserve on the personal side. So we already alluded to the fact that annual fee, $795 for both cards. The additional card fee, so for the consumer side, there is a $195 additional fee for an authorized user. For the business side, it's a $0 employee card. However, you really can only earn points on your employees' expenses, although there are a couple benefits that they can get or a couple credits they can get with their card, but they don't get lounge access or anything like that, like you can get with certain other cards and being an authorized user on those cards. You're still going to get 8x on Chase Travel. So basically, if you purchase any travel through Chase's travel portal directly, 4x on flights and hotels. But unfortunately, the business is only getting 1x on dining, where the consumer card is still getting 3x, which is a staple from when the Sapphire Reserve first came out. So nothing super exciting there, but online advertising is a 3X category. Is that super attractive? I would say probably not. I would think business owners, if they're looking to spend money on travel and they're using this card, they're probably outside of travel or when they're traveling are going to have higher dining out expenses. So I think 3X would have been a lot more valuable from that standpoint. Now, one of the things that we do have more clarity on is this concept of points boosting. And so I think this on the surface is a bigger drawback for a lot of people, especially I know most people that got into the Points and Miles world, their story is how they were using their points the wrong way, right? They were using it through the portal. And so one of the biggest draws with Chase Sapphire Reserve was that you would get guaranteed automatically or 1.5 cents per point on redeeming your Chase points through the portal. Well, now it's going to typically be 1 cent per point, but with what they have, these points boosts where you can get up to 2x. So now you can pretty much always get 1x, but there are going to be opportunities to get up to 2x with the point boost. I think this is a real interesting dynamic. And for people who do not know the concept of transferring points and the strategies we talk about on the podcast and in the Points and Miles world, this is a huge drawback. But realistically, for all of us, we shouldn't be using our points in the portal for the most part anyway. And I always preach that you typically want to get at least 2x of value for your points or more. So this opportunity for the points boost, from what I've heard, is usually these are going to be on purchases that are more higher class. So business class, first class, this is going to be more expensive hotels. These are the purchases that when you look in the travel portal, you might see that they're eligible to be redeemed for up to 2x. From what I'm hearing and reading, there's not going to be alerts going out saying, hey, all of these hotels or all these flights during this time frame, you can redeem for 2x. It's more so when you go and search for a flight on Chase's travel portal, it will show you whether you're going to earn 1 point or 1 cent per point or up to 2 cents per point of value. So not super ideal. I personally have not used the Chase travel portal or looked for a hotel or a flight in the Chase travel portal in years. So this isn't really going to affect me yet, and I doubt it would affect many of you, but something to know and understand about how the points boost works. You're still going to have the point transfer for hotels. Again, the travel protections are still in place. Priority pass with two guests are there. You do get Sapphire Lounge access as well with two guests. And one of the new things is that you'll get IHG Platinum status under both cards through December 31st of 2027. Now, if you have the IHG Premier One rewards card that I've talked about many, many times on the show, you already get platinum status with that, and that's a $95 or $99 fee card. So nothing super exciting there if you already have that card. But if you don't, which technically I don't have that, Taryn has that. And so I now, with my Chase Sapphire Reserve, I will have IHG Platinum status, which is kind of exciting, but not a huge draw because Platinum status doesn't do too much with IHG compared to some of the other higher tier programs. But it's always nice having some additional status when you go to a hotel. Now, the consumer card is also going to provide you Apple TV, free subscriptions there, Apple Music for free, whereas the business card is not providing that at all. And then you also will get what's called Sapphire Reserve exclusive tables under both cards, which is essentially access to primetime reservations at very, very specific restaurants, kind of run through open table there specifically. As far as credits go, again, some of these things have stayed the same. So both cards are going to have that $300 per year travel credit. Now, one thing to note, one of the big things I think are going to impact people, especially people who buy maybe a lot of cruises or they use Uber a lot as opposed to Lyft as an example, or they purchase train tickets often. So before it was 3x on all travel. Now it's 4x on flights and hotels. And then any other type of travel is 1x. Unless you happen to buy it through the Chase travel portal, then it's 8x. Or if you are specifically using Lyft, then it's 5x for specifically Lyft. So if you were planning on getting a huge 3x multiplier on a family cruise with your Sapphire Reserve, that's gone now. That's only going to be 1x. So maybe you're going to pivot your strategy away somewhere else now because of that. So you do get, though, the $300 travel credit, which still is anything coded as travel. So Lyfts, Ubers, plane tickets, hotels, anything there, automatic $300 back to you as soon as you spend that $300 in travel, which is great. TSA PreCheck, Global Entry, as I mentioned, that's still covered. Now, they do have this thing called the Edit, which is essentially their version of Amex's Fine Hotels and Resorts. So with that, you will get $250 credit every 6 months. Now, one bummer with this is that you actually have to book two nights to be eligible to get the $250 credit. And because these are much more upscale properties, that's probably going to be properties that are $500 to $1,000 or more per night. So it's not like the $250 credit is going to cover a full night stay for you like it theoretically could if it was one of Amex's Fine Hotel and Resort properties or something along those lines that you can actually find very few, but some that you can actually cover a full night stay on that $200 per night credit. So this may be an opportunity if you know you like to stay somewhere nice or you have a favorite hotel that is more upscale that is in part of the Edit. Maybe this is someplace that you choose to stay for a couple nights in a year or every 6 months and get this $250 credit plus some other credits inside the hotel like a $100 use credit that you can use on food and other things in the hotel and some other benefits there as well. Again, very similar to the Fine Hotels and Resorts benefit. You do, with both cards, get $10 per month with Lyft. So you do get $5 off each month on restaurant orders and up to $10 off two grocery and retail orders each month with DoorDash, and that is with both cards. Now, on the personal side, though, you do have this credit towards that Sapphire Reserve exclusive tables I told you about. So that's $150 per 6 months, so $300 a year. So that is essentially guaranteed $150 every 6 months you can use for a really expensive meal at a really nice restaurant. So maybe the meal's going to cost you $200 or $300 for that meal, but at least you'll get $150 credit every 6 months. Will everyone take advantage of that? Probably not, but some people will, and they'll find some value in it, especially if you're going to a nice restaurant in DC or New York or other parts of the country or the world. The other one is the StubHub, $150 per 6 months as well. I think this is an opportunity for people that may not go to concerts that often or shows or amusement tickets or whatever it may be to be able to say, well, hey, I've got $150 credit. Why not see what tickets we can get, what show we can see now? So maybe that's something that you would actively have used prior, or you weren't a concert goer prior, but maybe this is going to inspire you to get out there a little bit more. And then also a $10 per month Peloton credit. All three of these things I just mentioned, the Sapphire Reserve tables, the StubHub, the Peloton, the business card gets none of that. What the business card gets is $200 per 6 months to ZipRecruiter, $200 per year to Google Workspace, and then $50 per 6 months to giftcards.com and like what a certain category for the reserve business. So not super exciting there either. And then lastly, if you hit these higher tier spends, so you spend $75,000 on the consumer card or $120,000 on the business card, you're going to actually get IHG Diamond Elite status, which is their best tier. That's pretty cool. Southwest Airlines A-list status, a $500 Southwest Airlines credit, and a credit at the shops at Chase, which is $250 for the consumer and $500 for the business. Basically, that's pretty much Chase is taking some products like Dysons and other things, probably mark them up a little bit, and you can buy it directly through them. And you get a credit there if you hit these higher spends. Kudos goes out to the frequent miler. They put together a table that covers both cards side by side, so you can kind of see very easily exactly what you're getting here. So let's talk about the timeline around all of this. So starting June 23rd, which is on Monday, existing card members will get access to the points boost. So what that simply means is you have the opportunity, if you go through the travel portal, you can choose to either get 1.5x, or if there is something that actually has a points boost up to that 2x, you can redeem for that. Now, if you don't have a Sapphire Reserve currently, and you apply before June 23rd, you're going to be eligible for all the benefits of the old program, and you'll get access to the new benefits starting on October 26th of this year. If you apply on June 23rd or later, you automatically have all the benefits that we had just talked about, so you will not get access to 1.5x on redeeming through Chase Travel. So June 23rd is the pivotal date on Monday. If you currently have a Sapphire Reserve, the only thing that really changes for you is you have access to redeem your points for up to 2x. Anyone that just gets the card on June 23rd or later is basically going to get the card as is advertised currently, and that's basically it. Now, on October 25th, that's the last day you can earn points that are redeemable for 1.5x on Chase Travel. So if you move any points by this date to the Sapphire Reserve from any other cards in your household, that's going to count as being earned before October 26th. And again, will be usable for that 1.5x. I don't think these are big things to harp on because obviously we keep talking about not using points through Chase Travel. But let's just say you're really trying to just get behind points and miles at a very beginner and basic level. And you're like, hey, this is just a very simple, easy way for me to go about doing this. If for some reason you have a ton of points on other cards and you move them all to your Chase Sapphire Reserve before October 25th, it's going to count as being earned and redeemable for 1.5x. So you have access to either redeem for 1.5x or with the points boost up to 2x. Starting the next day, October 26th, all Sapphire Reserves are going to work the same exact way. So they're no longer going to earn the 3x for all travel. All the benefits that we just talked about are going to go into effect, whether you are a longtime reserve holder or you got the card after June 23rd. Either way, you're going to all be on the same playing field as far as how your benefits work. And then the next day, October 27th, is when the annual fee is going to go into place. So you're going to be charged $7.95 for anyone who has their renewal come up. So for example, if your reserve fee hits September 30th of every year, you would have paid the original $550 that you have always paid for the Sapphire Reserve. And then coming September 30th of next year, you're going to pay the elevated $7.95. However, if you're like me and your Sapphire Reserve fee doesn't hit until December, well, I just paid $550 back last December, and this year it's going to be $7.95 for me. So if I want to make a change, I have until December of this year, but someone whose date is September or even up to October 26th of this year essentially has the opportunity to wait until October of next year before they have to pay the elevated fee. So I know this was a lot and these dates are getting confusing. So just to simplify and kind of recap a little bit, on Monday or June 23rd specifically, for anyone that's listening to this late, if you already have the reserve, you're going to have access to points boost. Nothing changes for you until October. Anyone applying for the reserve June 23rd or later is going to have all the benefits of the new card as is advertised. You can transfer cards or transfer points or earn points on your Sapphire that you could redeem for 1.5x up to October 25th if you want to use the travel portal to redeem your points. Again, please don't do that. But if you wanted to, you could. October 26th, everybody gets the ability to use the Sapphire Reserve as advertised. So all the earning categories adjust, all the credits are in play, and everything else all kick in starting October 26th. And then starting October 27th, the fee will get charged. So if you have a recurring or your annual billing for this card is October 27th or later, then that's when your new fee will step in and you will get hit with that this year. If you've already paid your Sapphire Reserve fee for this year or all the way up to October 26th, it won't kick in until the exact anniversary date next year. And then last thing to note is, in 2027, if you move points to your reserve that you are trying to redeem for 1.5x, you have until October 25th of 2027 to redeem them for 1.5x through Chase Travel if you, again, were so inclined and really wanted to get that 1.5x out of it. So guys, this was obviously a lot. There's a lot to think about. I am leaning in the direction of keeping my Sapphire Reserve. I absolutely have loved it over the years. It is technically, I think, one of the first real cards I felt like I got in the points and miles space as I was knowing it when it first came out, I believe in 2016. And so I feel like I'm going to probably stick with this. I'm going to do a little bit more soul searching and figuring out the numbers and seeing if it makes sense. But I do purchase tickets on StubHub. I do utilize, you know, a lot of these different things. I have Apple TV Plus and Apple Music. So some of these benefits that are here, I absolutely would actually use. And there's a few that I probably will just use because it are provided. So I'm very curious for you all, when you hear all of this, and I know this was a lot, would you keep the card? Or are you thinking about getting rid of it, downgrading it, something along those lines? I do think another thing to point out as well, which is interesting, is they are doing away with the you can only have one Sapphire card at a time rule. So you theoretically can have now a preferred, a reserve, and a business reserve, which is huge. And interestingly enough, a little disappointing, because I think if obviously if we had known that, I would have considered downgrading my Sapphire Reserve so I could have gotten the elevated 100K signup bonus for the preferred and then maybe consider getting a new reserve this year. I didn't do that because, quite honestly, I just didn't want the hassle of doing it. We earn Chase points pretty well and pretty easily, and I've had this card, and it would actually be one that would be quite a lot to have to update a lot of billing and other stuff with. That's besides the point. I just chose not to. But that is another interesting change, which could impact how you see this. Maybe you have a preferred and maybe they have a really killer signup bonus with this card. Now, 524 still plays a role. But again, these are all things to just keep in mind when it comes to making decisions around whether to keep these cards or not. A couple reminders before the month is out. One is that Don't forget the loophole to get to your Amex points into Alaskan Airlines is going to be ending here June 30th. So that's the Amex to Hawaiian Air and then Hawaiian Air to Alaska transfer. So if you haven't already decided to move some points over, I know that some people have been going back and forth debating how much should they speculatively transfer, because we always talk about never speculatively transferring. But this is, of course, I won't say once in a lifetime, but likely a loophole that will probably not come along as easily again. And especially for someone that has a lot of Amex points sitting out there and know that there's a ton of amazing sweet spot redemptions with Alaska Airlines, could be something to take huge advantage of. So anyone that hasn't taken advantage of that already, be sure that you do. Only a couple weeks left to do that. Another deadline before the end of the month, just as a friendly reminder, that this is the last time for the foreseeable future you'll be able to get your $200 Dell credit for your Amex Business Platinum on the way that it has been. So for the past years, it's been every January to June, you would get a $200 credit for Dell. And then July through December, you get another $200 credit for Dell. And that really helped. That's $400 there that really helped offset the fee for the Amex Business Platinum. Well, starting July 1st, the Dell benefit will be changing. Instead of $200 every 6 months, it's going to be $150 for the entire year. Then an additional $1,000 if you complete a total of $5,000 in Dell purchases during the calendar year. Then Amex is also changing the Business Platinum's Adobe benefit, moving from $150 annually to $250 off a minimum of $600 in purchases during the calendar year. So really not ideal. We're going from a $400 credit. I mean, you literally could buy something that's $200 and get a completely $200 wiped off of your purchase to now only getting $150 for the entire year versus $400 for the entire year. So that's a huge bummer. So make sure to take advantage of your Amex Business Platinum Dell credits before June 30th to not miss out on that. And speaking of frequent miler earlier, they actually had been the one, I think the first people to report that Chase has finally allowed or rolled out the long-awaited feature that allows users to transfer their credit between their Chase cards online without needing to call customer service. So this is great because essentially you can move available credit from one card to another directly in your account dashboard. And why that's beneficial is, well, if you only have one Chase card, that's not going to really be of that much interest to you. But let's just say you have a few Chase cards. And so when you just applied for a Hyatt or an IHG or a Sapphire Preferred or whatever it may be, or maybe you're going to get the new refreshed reserve when it rolls out. If you got a new card and maybe they said, hey, you're only going to have a $3,000 or $4,000 limit on this card, but a separate card that you have has a $22,000 limit that you never use, you could very easily transfer credit from one card to the other, or credit access to be able to make bigger purchases. So if you know you're going to want to hit maybe a larger sign-up bonus with a larger maybe home expense or whatever it may be, you can now very easily move your credit between Chase cards. Now you can't move personal credit to business cards or business credit to personal cards. It has to stay within either personal or business, but it's nice that you have a layer of convenience from managing multiple Chase cards, which can be really helpful going forward. So this next piece of news I know is going to be of benefit to the majority of our listeners. Based on our statistics, I think around north of 80% of our listeners listen on an iPhone. And so for iPhone users, I think this is really cool if you have not heard about this yet. So the TSA Act officially confirmed that it's going to expand support for Apple's wallet-based digital IDs, which is actually going to make airport security a little bit more streamlined for iPhone and Apple Watch users. So basically, you can now use, or once this rolls out fully, you'll be able to use the digitally stored driver's license or state ID that includes the real ID at select TSA pre-check checkpoints. So they can simply tap your device. You don't actually need to have your physical ID out. Where that's beneficial is if you're scanning, you know, your boarding pass through your phone, you don't have to additionally fumble through your wallet to pull out your ID or your passport. So it's contactless, it's private, and you only have to show the necessary information for identity verification. And so this is currently supported in a list of growing states. So Arizona, Georgia, Maryland, more states are expected to come soon. And this is all part of TSA's goal to modernize airport security. Now, one thing to point out, if you're leaving the country, you're coming back through Customs and Immigration, this is not going to supersede your passport. So this is really beneficial and going to be beneficial for domestic travel. So if you are going, you know, from, I don't know, Miami to New York or something like that, you should be able to just use your phone to be both your boarding pass and your ID if you have everything set up. But you obviously still want to have your physical copy on you and make sure that you've loaded everything into your Apple Wallet ahead of time. You have the latest iOS version, all these things. And really, this could just help speed up your next airport experience. A little minor news here is that on Monday, June 30th, which is going to be about 3 years after the original announcement, Oman Air is finally going to officially be part of the One World Alliance, which is great. If you've never been to Oman or flown Oman Air, it's a fantastic airline. Great service. I mean, even on an hour flight, you get a meal. It's a fantastic airline. And I think the country of Oman is probably one of the most underrated countries to visit. One of our favorites for sure. In the past few years, One World has added Alaska, Fiji, Royal Air Maroc, and I think Hawaiian Airlines is likely going to join soon as well. So for those that are, you know, American Airlines loyalists like ourselves, having more in the One World network is absolutely ideal for future travel planning. Unfortunately, as we see status and devaluations and changes happening, it looks like Hilton Honors has quietly removed the late checkout from its list of official member benefits, and that includes all tiers. So even if you're gold and diamond, it used to be actually listed as a perk. Now, it always said late checkout was based on availability, which people would argue oftentimes they were told they couldn't get late checkout, but now it's actually completely gone from Hilton's website, and it's replaced with just saying a generic like free Wi-Fi in the same slot that it was before. And although it still appears in the Hilton app, it's likely going to probably go away as well. So what we're seeing is that this is reflecting a little bit of a broader trend with Hilton, that they seem to be trying to standardize late checkout fees across their properties to earn more revenue. And removing the benefit could be the next step in that shift. So again, it doesn't really feel like a lot is changing because a lot of properties were really stingy with late checkout requests, but it's still not ideal when you say that these are part of your elite perks, but you don't honor them or you completely take them away. So while traveling internationally, you might have a little bit of better use with your status, especially if you're a Hilton Diamond member. I feel like probably on the domestic side of travel, we might see the benefits start to feel like they're thinning out a little bit. A couple things in the world of Hyatt as well. So Hyatt's offering up about 16,000 bonus points for stays at Hyatt Place, Hyatt House, or Hyatt Studios now through September 7th. But you must register in advance on their promo site with your World of Hyatt number, which we will link to in the show notes. Basically, if you stay 3 nights, you get 3,000 bonus points, 5 nights total, 8,000 bonus points. If you stay 8 nights total, that's 16,000 bonus points. And this is actually pretty interesting because if you're wanting maybe to plan a last minute family trip or something like that, again, these have to be booked after you registered, which you could also look at possibly seeing if you could cancel a booking that you have and rebook if you're not going to lose anything from a value standpoint, cost standpoint, or anything like that. But award redemptions with World of Hyatt right now for Category 1 hotels, they are as low as 3,500 points per night during off-peak times. So this promotion can actually go a long ways, because if you imagine, if you stay 3 nights in a Category 1 during off-peak time, so 3,500 points per night, that would be 10,500 points that it would cost you for those 3 nights, but then you would get 3,000 bonus points back if you only stayed the 3 nights. So that can be a nice savings of points, or essentially almost be very close to a fourth night free. It's not exactly, but pretty close. So I think this could be helpful if you're trying to do a little bit of a mattress run, not a true mattress run, but if you are looking to get some stays in to help with getting some of your status up or keeping your explorist or globalist status, this could be a way to do a little bit of a mattress run and get some of your points back for said stays. So the math could work out in your favor if you were to do that. Because, for example, if you were to stay 8 nights total, again, using a category one properties, which I know this is, you know, we're being very specific here, but just from a math standpoint, category one property, 3,500 points per night for 8 nights, that would cost you 28,000 Hyatt points in total, but you would get 16,000 bonus points back. Effectively meaning that your 8-night stay only cost you 12,000 points, meaning that you essentially stayed for 1,500 points per night. So again, the math could work out. I don't think this is something that was maybe worth someone just jumping on, but if you do already have some family travel planned or some last minute trip ideas that can pop up, maybe you want to stay at the Hyatt House across from Universal Orlando or like Hyatt Place Moab, different places like that, you could find yourself being able to get your stays essentially at 1500 points per night, which I think is an absolute steal. Or those 8 nights can go towards your working to build up your status with Hyatt for the year. And then in another Hyatt update, they've actually just opened their first adults-only all-inclusive resort in Aruba. That's the Secrets Baby Beach Aruba Resort. It's located in scenic Baby Beach Bay. It's got 304 suites, swim-out rooms, the club-level perks, gourmet dining, all the pools, all the things that you would come to expect from a Secrets adults-only all-inclusive resort. Mentioned last week and last week quick hits that they just rolled out one in St. Lucia. Beautiful, beautiful country and island. Aruba, the same thing. Very beautiful, very fun place to visit if you have not been. So their award nights start at 25,000 World of Hyatt points. Now that's going to be for a garden view, kind of standard room, not for a club or a suite or anything like that. But the cash rates are from $730 to $1,000 per night. So you can get a pretty good redemption on your points with this stay. But also you'll earn 500 bonus points per night through Hyatt's new hotels bonus offer. So it could be amazing for a summer escape, especially because summertime is typically going to be off peak for the Caribbean because it's, you know, hot there, it's hot here. Just another place to look at if you're looking for where else can we stay, especially it's a brand new resort. I imagine they're going to have a lot of great amenities and it'll be a fantastic experience. And just going to wrap up with one of our listener questions. This was in our private Facebook group as well. This one comes from Amy, who's excited that she's booking her first international points and miles flight. They're going from Tulsa to Edinburgh next year, which is fantastic. So our question was, is it better to book as soon as flights open or wait a bit for better deals? We're happy flying economy, but business class would be a dream. And she said that she got into this hobby after a cash pay trip to Italy last summer. And so she's so excited to have discovered a smarter way to travel. So Amy, love that you have started to learn how to revolutionize your travels for the future. And so I already had commented on this in the Facebook group, but basically said that availability is best either super far out or super last minute. So if you know that you're going to be traveling, you have an idea of your dates, I would go ahead and start looking at booking now, unless you're really waiting to get enough points for business class, or if you have a very specific route or maybe plane style or cabin that you're looking to fly for the trip itself. Now, for me, I almost never know where I'm traveling 11 months from now. A lot of our travels, I feel like, are 3 to 4 months out. We're like, oh, let's go here or let's go there. So I rarely ever get that 11-month out booking side. And occasionally we'll get the 1 month or less booking. So if you already know that you have a trip in the distant future, even if you know it's 18 months from now, go and look from now, look at where you want to go and start researching for how to get there. Even though it might be December of next year, go and look 11 months from now. So that in case would be May of next year and see what routes will get you there, what airlines, and when does availability open up with those airlines. When you see that this specific airline opens up at 350 days or 355 days as an example, you can earmark on your calendar the exact day that you need to start looking for your departure options and for your award options if you know that you're going to be able to fly that far out. Now, other types of redemptions like Lufthansa First and other things, they come out with like 2 weeks availability to be able to be booked through their partner airlines. So in that case, if you know you have a last minute trip that you want to take tomorrow or next week, then that's going to be an opportunity to be super close up. So again, it's just all about balance and understanding. But as you level up your experience in the points and miles world, you'll get a good feel for how to time your bookings properly. But Amy, super excited for you to have the ability to, I know this is for your 50th birthday trip, so absolutely love the fact that you're revolutionizing how to take future travels using points and miles. And that will do it for this week, everybody. Hope everyone has had a fantastic week. As always, appreciate all of the feedback, all of you as listeners, the engagement in the social media that we get, the DMs that we get, the responses in the Facebook group. So really appreciate it. I feel like we've got a great community of people that love to travel. You guys keep me motivated to keep bringing great content. So I love the feedback. Thank you so much. Everyone take care. Have a great week, and we will catch you in the next episode. Take care.
Luxury flights and hotels can be had for free. The world of points and miles sounds too good to be true, but it's actually real, but only if you know what you're doing.
On Frequent Miler on the Air, Greg and I'm Nick, discuss all the ways to earn points and miles and use them for outsized value.
Join us every Friday for our full episodes and every Tuesday for our quick, single-topic coffee break episodes.
See you there.